Hi, this is Dr. Stephanie Wigner, your podcast host. I'm a speaker, a chiropractor, a business coach, and a multiple seven-figure entrepreneur. I'm committed to helping wellness practitioners just like you build the business and the life of their dreams. Together, we'll dive into increasing profit, hiring the right team, and buying back your time so that your life can begin to prosper. Learn how I'm increasing my wealth and building a legacy without sacrificing those that I'm building it for. This is the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. Hello, you beautiful people. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. Today, I have a special guest for you, Matt Terrio, who is a real estate investor and mogul and now educator author. And he is going to talk to us about building true financial freedom today, as well as some of the mistakes he sees early investors making inside of real estate. And so thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So tell our listeners how you got started in entrepreneurship.
Wow, it can go back really far. I was the consummate kid that had the lemonade stand. I did have a paper route when people read papers. I did sell magazine subscriptions door to door, all before the age of 13, 14 years old. So I guess it was always in there. And I don't know where I got it from, because I come from a family of civil servants, lots of police officers, people working in the aerospace industry. So I don't know where I got it from, but it was just there. And I guess my freshman year, I was in musical theater. And we did flash dance. It was crazy because I was born and raised in Newport Beach, Irvine, California, and very much your lily white yuppie neighborhood at the time. So this flash dance finale, oh my God, I haven't told the story in 30 years. This is funny that you brought it out of me. But the grand finale, it required two break dancers to do the last thing. And obviously no one in my city knew how to do that. This was 1984. Our teacher went to, quote unquote, the other side of the tracks and hired someone to come over and teach us. That was like the most pivotal moment for me, because I fell in love with the music. I fell in love with the culture. And I was this weird outcast for my entire high school life. I just fell in love so much with the music. And fast forward, I started my own record label and got a major label distribution. This was like when I was 23, 24, and was making millions and just really crushed it before I turned the age of 30. And then this thing called the digital download came along and just turned the whole industry upside down. And it put everybody essentially out of business. I think Sony laid off 20,000 people that year, and Universal Music did something similar. And so I had to go out at the age of 34 to go try and find, okay, what am I qualified to do? Because I just breezed right through college. I just skipped all of that. I had no degree, no credentials. I was just very fortunate to be good at something that people were willing to pay me money for. But now people weren't paying money for that because they were getting it for free. I went to try to sell cars. I went to try and sell insurance. Anyone that went to a temp service, because I was a really fast typer. So I got a little work there and ended up bagging groceries and was there for about 6 months and was just like, how did I end up here? And I was like, wow, it doesn't look like anyone's coming to rescue me or save me. I have to do something for myself. And I just didn't know what that was going to be. I knew I really missed my money. And I really wanted my money. And so I was like, if I got to learn something new, I have to figure out what that is that pays really well. So I was like, God, give me a sign. The grocery store manager, who was also 34 years old, we became close because we had a lot in common. We were the same age. And he had said, Matt, if you want your money back, real estate, it's really the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate shot at making real money. And at that point in my life, I didn't know whether it was true or not, but I was feeling far below average. So I felt like, who am I to aspire to be above that or anything greater than that? He had showed me, Matt, I've been pushing carts here since I was 16. In 2 years, that'll be 20 years. And I'll be able to take 70% of my salary as a pension for the rest of my life. But look what I've done along the way. I've been able to buy a couple apartment buildings. And the cash flow from those two apartment buildings is going to pay me more than my pension is going to give me. Okay, I'm a believer. So I went home and I Googled everything there was real estate and found out that I had an aunt that I hadn't seen probably in 15, 16 years, and she was the number one agent just a couple cities over. I had had a whole bottle of wine that night, and so I was filled with liquid courage and fired off an email to this aunt that I hadn't talked to for so long. And she responded in the morning, and we had lunch that day, and within 24 hours, I was in real estate agent school. I just figured that was the logical place to start, and it took me about 3 or 4 years to really figure it out. Ooh, I think I'm sitting on the wrong side of the desk. And I had a couple investors as clients. And I was like, you know what? I like the looks of their profits more than I like the looks of my commissions. So I made a huge investment in my education and just did what they told me to do and found this little book. I doubt you've ever heard of it. It's groundbreaking. Get a pen, write this down. Called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Have you heard of that
book? I knew you were going to say that one.
And that was probably the biggest deal there, because it gave me two things specifically. And so many people got so many different things from that book. But the one thing was just gave me a new definition of wealth. I was born and raised thinking that wealth was having a lot of money in the bank. And then coming from the entertainment industry and the music industry, there was a lot of money in the bank and I felt wealthy. But I had to work every day. I was only as good as my release from the last month. And then this whole new definition in Kiyosaki's book was you have enough residual income coming in each month that exceeds your monthly expenses. That's wealthy when you don't have to work. And then the other part of that was this concept of passive income. That was the second thing I got from there. I speak English, right? I can take the word passive. I can take the word income. I can put them together and figure out what it means. But to actually pursue it as an intention was something that I'd never been introduced to. So between those two ideas, I was able to, quote unquote, exit the rat race per his formula in 3.5 years and woke up one day and I was like, I'm not rich. I didn't have all the money that I used to have. But you know what? I don't have to work today. Now, having experienced both sides of that, I think I actually preferred that. And the next launch into my entrepreneurial thing was, if I didn't have that terrible calamity with the emerging technologies, changing the way people listen to music, if that never happened, I would have never been introduced to this. I would have had no desire to even look for it. What a tragedy that so many people don't ever get to experience this unless they hit the bottom at some point and they start looking for other things. And I was just thinking, what if we just swapped out the book Catcher in the Rye in high school and just put in Rich Dad, Poor Dad instead? What impact would that have on people? I went somewhere where they were teaching people how to diversify their streams of income. And one of the most logical ways for people to start is to start teaching or consulting on what they've been successful at. So I was like, okay, that sounds good. And so I began teaching it. Fast forward another 15 years. Here we are today. I own Epic Real Estate. We have the longest running real estate investing podcast. I started that in 2009 when no one even knew what a podcast was. I said podcast and people were like, what is that? I hadn't explained to them what it was. And that just turned into a really thriving business totally on accident. And we have a great YouTube channel and we probably service 10 new high-end clients a month. My wife feels what we call our turnkey operation. So busy professionals who don't necessarily want to go get their hands dirty and do all the work or don't have the time to go and do the day-to-day investing stuff. She'll just do it for them. She'll go out and find a property, fix it up, put a tenant in place, coordinate the property management, arrange the financing, and just hand it to them on a silver platter as a cash-producing asset. So she does that side of the business. I teach the people that want to be a little bit more hands-on. And here we are today, talking to you.
That's awesome. A long journey. And I actually love you painting that full picture because I think people are like, entrepreneurship, make $1 million in 2 years and call it good. And it's like, okay, you've been at this for a while and you've learned a lot of lessons along the way. And I just love that you pointed out rock bottom actually gave me these new opportunities that I might not have had otherwise. I think so often we can learn just as much from like our pitfalls or our mistakes than we can the things that are super successful for us. So how many income streams do you have today?
I've probably got like 50. So there's 50 of them, but they all come from houses. I've got about 50 notes. These are notes that I own on houses. So other people own them, but I'm carrying the note. I'm the bank on those. I have an educational platform that pays a residual income every month. I'm a partner in a software for real estate investors. So those are probably the four primary ones. And I have 4 or 5 different affiliate relationships. So there's probably 9 or 10.
And out of those, which ones would you deem truly passive?
None of them.
Okay. I love that. Even talking about passive income, and I want to dive into this a little bit more because I love the word residual income versus passive because I've been obsessed with figuring out how to try to make more income. And me and my husband learned, we started making money and we were like, okay, we're going to deploy it into these things and it's all going to be passive. And then we quickly realized nothing was truly passive. And we weren't at a place in our careers where we had time to pour into all these different avenues. We really had to focus on our things that were producing really good cash flow for us. And at that point, we were like, okay, maybe we're actually better at making active income than we are passive income. And so we cut the amount of businesses we had in half in the last 2 to 3 years has just been focused on building active income and then getting strategic with the profits from those. That's why I love to see, like, do you have 100 ways to make passive income? The answer is no. So people who are waiting for that golden ticket, it doesn't really exist. But let's dive into this concept of like residual income. So maybe it's not completely passive, but it is an aspect of getting your money to work for you.
Yep, definitely. And so I still like the word passive income, and not that residual income is incorrect. Those can be used interchangeably, just as long as you understand that passive income doesn't mean uninvolved income. Mm-hmm. Right. You got to stay involved. Like, for example, my affiliate relationships. I don't really have to do anything because I've posted a couple YouTube videos. I refer to people over there and that goes on and that keeps coming to me. But if I don't manage it, it will get a little bit smaller each month. So a ton of money is coming to me passively. But if I want to keep that plate spinning, I got to go over and give it some attention every once in a while. And that's pretty much the case with everything. If you have a truly passive income, what you have really done is you relinquished all management and control of your income.
Yes.
And that can be a very scary situation. It's remarkable on how hard people work to create an income so they won't have to work. There's so much energy and time and resources put into that.
If you just put that into something else, what would you be able to create?
Totally.
Oh, I just love the distinction and the unpacking of the word even passive income, mm-hmm. because I think younger entrepreneurs, especially, are like, passive, I'm not going to have to do anything. I see all these threads online, and that's not really what passive income means. It means maybe you're just not putting forth as much effort as you are in the job or the business mm-hmm. that you show up to every day and work on tirelessly. So for you, when you started diversifying income, you really went into real estate. And what is your preferred method? Do you like single family? Do you like multi? Unit? Do you like short term? Like, where's your expertise?
Yeah, it's definitely single family because that's where I got started. It was just simple. It was easy to understand. I've ventured into other asset classes and I keep coming back to single family just because I get it. I just understand it. It's like you buy a house, you put a tenant in place and then you just make sure nothing breaks and you collect the rent.
Yeah.
But the reason I like it is because there's real estate specifically. And I've called my own podcast and my YouTube channel, and I just released a book. So I've referred to them all the same. They're just money conversations disguised as real estate conversations, because it's really just the tool, the vehicle that produces, you know, it produces the appreciation. So you have this massive hedge against inflation like you really don't have in any other asset class. You can produce the income, right? So there is a residual income. You produce the amortization. So if it's an investment property, someone else is actually buying that investment for you by them paying you rent every month. And then you get the depreciation and the deductions. So that chips away significantly in your biggest expense in life, your taxes. And then you have the ability to use leverage, right? That you can't use in any other asset class. So it allows you to take a small amount of your own resources to take 100% control of someone else's resources, being that house and all the benefits that it produces. The vehicle is real estate, but if you look at it from just a money conversation, where can you check all of those boxes in any other investment? You can't. And if I find it, then I might start looking at that, investing in that too. But there really isn't. So that's why I've been so real estate dependent. But that one little place that I went to where they told me to start teaching or consulting like that, the real diversification play was, yes, I was going to teach. It was right at the introduction of membership websites. These were like a brand new thing. Oh my God, you could post videos inside of a paywall and people actually pay to access it and they'll watch it. And they'll just pay you $97 a month and then you never have to do anything. And so that's what I was really attracted to, was that, because I didn't really want to talk to people. But it's just all real estate related. And it's because of that, because I think it's just the perfect money vehicle. And I go back to my grocery store manager when he said real estate is the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate shot at creating real wealth. And there were three key points in there. The final frontier, which it seems like in hindsight, he's pretty much accurate with that statement. For the average person, I think he's pretty accurate with that, because you don't need a special talent. You don't need a great jump shot. You don't need to be super fast or talented in any sort of sport. You don't need to be able to sing or tell jokes or act, right? And you don't need a lot of money to get in. Where those exceptions would be, you need something additional. But for the average person, it's available. And to create real wealth, right? If you look in hindsight, there was never a bad time to buy and hold real estate. Never.
I love even the idea that, obviously, my podcast is geared to a lot of entrepreneurs, but I know that real estate is a vehicle that you can access whether you own your own business or not. And I do think that there is so much freedom in that, because not everybody's meant to have their own business, but it allows them to still access the ability to invest in real estate too. It's not like it's only for one person or another. So I do love that point of how it's literally for everybody.
And you don't have to be a full-time real estate investor to take advantage of all the benefits. If you look at the traditional way, and of course, Kiyosaki points this out, but I've taken it so much further than he has with regard to the explanation and the logic and the rationale. But if you take the traditional advice of going to a financial planner and letting them show you all these different vehicles you can invest in, and it's all based around the concept of compound interest, right? The miracle of compound interest, and this is going to make everybody wealthy. But the problem that they don't show you first is all the fees that are involved in all those types of vehicles. And they don't show you how compound interest fees also compound as well. And that's a huge deduction. When you start extrapolating that out, you're like, oh my God, that 1% fee has taken one third of my money by the time I hit the age of 65. It's a really amazing visual. But the other part is most people just don't make enough to save enough for compound interest to do its magic, because it really hockey sticks at the end. And if the grace of God was over you and nothing happened in your life and nothing was uninterrupted there, even if it does work, the best and most active years of your life are behind you. That whole idea of the interest, I think it's a scam. I think the get rich slow plan that most people promote is a scam, because what you're trading is your life for it to work. And so what we've chosen is just to compound assets. Now there's room and you can do both, but just by taking, say, one property every year, or maybe even every other year. If you look at the average books of a financial planner and all their clientele, the only people in there that have even a shot at retiring at the same lifestyle that they had when they were working are people that have incorporated real estate into that plan. It's the only way you got a chance. So it can be all real estate or some real estate, but if it's no real estate, you're going to have problems.
Yeah. And so when you talk about, you said, I cracked the formula inside of that book, you are essentially alluding to the fact that you were able to cover your lifestyle and your expenses through real estate. Is that correct?
Correct. That was the vehicle that I chose for my income stream, my residual income.
And is that what you define as financial freedom?
Yeah. If you're free from working from finances, that's a good definition. Sure.
Yeah, everybody says they're chasing financial freedom, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, oh, I just want financial freedom. And I think it means something different maybe to everybody. Mm-hmm. But it's like, do you just want to be able to buy groceries? Or do you want to have your entire lifestyle covered by your assets? Or do you want to have a net worth of $5 million? Like, I think financial freedom means something different to everybody. So I was curious what it meant to you.
Yeah, I think there's a distinction though between independence and freedom. So independence is, yes, you're a business owner and you're responsible for your own results and you get to eat what you kill. And if you don't kill, you don't eat. But if you're good at that, if you're a good hunter and you're a good performer, you provide a good service to society or a good product, then I think that's financial independence. Mm-hmm. But I think the freedom is the next level of that, where now you're not chasing money, right? Mm-hmm. Money, in a sense, money starts chasing you. Mm-hmm. Money starts working for more money. And that's from Kiyosaki's book too, right? The rich don't work for money. Your money works for you. And once you hit to that point where your money is working for you, then I think that's a place where, you know, that's the freedom.
What do you think a lot of mistakes are that maybe amateur investors are making?
My context is going to be real estate specific, but I imagine you could probably apply this to other investment classes as well. This is a perfect segue. We're talking about financial freedom. And you said everybody's pursuing that. Everybody wants it, right? So if that's what you really want, you have to first decide, is that what you really want? And if you say yes, now you got to start looking at the actions that you're taking. Are they producing that? Are they getting you closer to it? So a perfect example is you want to be financially free, but you're trying really hard to be debt free. That's an opposite action that's going to take you longer to get your freedom. So you have to decide what's more important to you, being debt free or being financially free. Or the other one is, I want my house paid off free and clear. Do you want your house paid off free and clear, or do you want financial freedom? Because by paying off your house and getting that free and clear, it's going to take you much longer to get to your financial freedom. Or they want financial freedom, but they're maxing out their 401k. Again, that's a conflicting action for what you actually saying that you want. And what people are doing is they want the freedom so they can retire. But all of those three things I just mentioned is that they've retired their money before they retired themselves. So the visual is now your money is sitting on the beach, sipping the fruity drink while you're going to work every day. Right? That should be reversed. Your money should be going to work every day while you sit on the beach sipping the fruity drink. So I think that's the big mistake, is that they say what they want, but then they don't know the actions to take to get it.
In this current economy, are you changing the way that you're investing, or are you going full steam ahead with what you've always done? Obviously, most people looking at real estate are like, oh, the interest rates are so high and that sort of thing. Are you just keeping your head down and doing what you've always done, or are you changing up your tactics?
Thank you for bringing that back around, because I was thinking about this when you asked me what kind of real estate that I do. Is it just single family? I started it because it's simple. I'm sticking with it because I think it's the best, and because of this economy. And I don't know if it's directly related to the economy, but I think it's definitely directed to what's going on in society. If we look right now at real estate, I'm keeping my head down and doing what I've always done, but now for a new reason and a much bigger motivation than what got me started. The first thing is that there's such a huge imbalance of supply and demand when it comes to the housing and the amount of people. 2008, we had a massive amount of houses, not enough people to live in them. That's why we ultimately crashed. Right now, it's completely flipped. We are so far behind in building, and we have so many more people. And if you look at the National Association of Home Builders, their confidence is way up on where housing is going to go. But if you look at the actual housing starts, they're not building new houses. They're not building them at nearly the pace that they need to for us to catch up and equal this whole imbalance out. Now there's another part of it that goes so much deeper. The new home builders, they're not building communities to sell. A lot of them are shifting building communities to rent because they want to be the owners of the real estate because they know the demand is so strong. So if you're the owner, that's only going to drive the value of the properties up. This is why Wall Street has made such a big move in the last decade to single family houses, because they look at these dynamics and these demographics that's happening. You have this massive demand coming, not just from people, but now from corporations. Mm-hmm. Then if you look at immigration, if we could just talk about politics aside, but you can't deny that the 12.5 million people that have come over the southern border, where are they going to live? The only way that's going to shift is if the trend of having shelter over your head, if that somehow goes out of fashion, right? If everyone just decides, I'll just live under the stars, that's no big deal. Who needs a house? That's not going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Here's what I believe right now is that I think houses are as affordable as they're ever going to be.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to get cheaper. It's not going to get easier. And I think in 10 years, it'll essentially be impossible. So if you have all of these forces driving up the value of houses, a rising tide, it lifts all boats. And I think it behooves everybody to get as many boats or control as many boats in the water as they can right now. I don't think you can go wrong. There might be a speed bump or two along the way. And someone, I listened to that guy on the podcast a year ago, look where I'm at now. But you could have said that to me the day before Lehman Brothers went out of business in 2008. Which if you would have bought your house the day before that happened, that technically could have been the worst time in history to buy a piece of real estate. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't sell it, you've tripled your money since then, right? And so there might be a speed bump or so along the way, but there's three things that have to happen. One of three things. One, we have to build more houses and we have to build them really fast. We're not doing it, okay? We're going the opposite direction. We're building them slower. Second thing that would have to happen is the government would have to build houses. They're not going to do it. And if you've ever lived in government housing, you probably don't want them to do it. And then the third thing would have to be, which is what we're seeing right now, people are going to have to change the way that they're living, meaning you're seeing more and more multi-generational families underneath one roof. It's mm-hmm. very much how it is in Europe and everything, because it's so congested over there. It's going to be one of those three things. Regardless of which one of those three things happens, the single family house is going to rise in value. It's going to be a privilege. It's going to be a real luxury.
I love that. I think you make such good points. I'm kicking myself here just as we're talking. I'm like, why didn't I buy any real estate this year? I said earlier that we were really focused on building active income.
That's what you're going to say next year, though.
I know. So no better time than now to just buy a damn house.
Yep.
Where can our listeners connect with you? Because I know they're going to be super intrigued by this conversation and want to dive deeper into some of your content. I know you have an amazing popular YouTube channel. Is that a good way for them to get exposed to you?
Yeah, that's a great place. It's Epic Real Estate. So that's the YouTube channel. If you're listening to this right now, you like podcasts or the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast. So those would be the two best places.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know that this is going to have a lot of our listeners excited about real estate and looking to buy some of their own.
Awesome. Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks for having me.
Hey there. Do you struggle with using multiple softwares to run your office? Well, I have the perfect solution for you. Genesis Chiropractic Software by Clinic Mind. This all-in-one system and billing service is cloud-based and designed by chiropractors for chiropractors. Its automated workflows streamline every aspect of your practice, from efficient billing processes that increase your collections to easy-to-use dashboards and retention tools that will keep your patients compliant with your care recommendations. We all know it's not just about getting more new patients, but also keeping the ones you do have happy. If you're interested in improving your office with a proven platform that works and want things to stop falling through the cracks, check them out at genesischiropracticsoftware.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Wealthy Practitioner Podcast. If you liked what I shared with you today, please rate the show and share it with your friends on social media. To connect with other practitioners just like you, join our exclusive Facebook group, The Wealthy Wellness Practitioner, where we continue the conversation about building profitable businesses. See you next week.